Welcome to the Private Practice with Soul podcast. My name is Dr. Brooklyn Storm, and I help private practice owners align their business back with their soul's calling, with their big vision, and with their soul's purpose. Unlike other private practice coaches, I've traveled the world in search of spiritual resources, spiritual tools, education, and information so that you can have the transformation that your soul desires and needs, so that you can up-level your business. How much fun is this? I love it so much. Guys, if you're not already a member of the Private Practice Monthly Mentorship Group, please check out the show notes. I would love for you to be there. In the meantime, thank you so much for pushing play today. Let's begin. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Private Practice with Soul podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Brooklyn Storm, and I want to say thank you very much for listening to another episode, and also to take a second to welcome our new subscribers. Thank you for joining us today as well. So today's episode is, I guess, a little bit more around strategy and business practices as opposed to some of the more spiritual things, but we will tie it in with a spiritual lens toward the end. But I think this is a really, really, really important topic to discuss, and it's one that I haven't shared with you on this podcast before, or indeed in any of my posts, but I feel like it's time to do that now, because I know I'm not alone when I say to you that I have been harassed in my practice by a client or two in the 20 odd years, almost 25 years this year, that I've been working in private practice. And I'll tell you a little bit about my story, and I think it's important that you hear it, because when I was going through this, I felt very, very alone. And there's somebody I've been working with recently who's been going through this, and I just think that it's important to get a message out to you that you're not alone. There are other women and men, I imagine, in private practice too, that go through an experience like this. So let me share with you what happened with me. And it was an experience where I was seeing a child, and I was dealing with two parents. The parents were divorced. The mum brought the child along, the little girl along for therapy, and that was all good. But what started happening was boundaries started to get crossed. And what that looked like was mum would start wanting to dominate the sessions. She didn't want me to spend too much time with the little girl. Mum wanted to spend session time talking about issues she was having in her life. So I tried to manage this, of course, in all the ways that you do, and that didn't work. And what would happen then is, so I put this boundary in place and I said, no, 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 the therapy is for your daughter, not for you. If you want therapy, I can refer you to somebody else. She already had another therapist of her own in place, yet she still wanted to talk with me. So again, I put a boundary in place. I reiterated that boundary. And then what happened was mum didn't like that at all. So she stopped bringing the little girl along for therapy for a few months. Then mum reappeared, and what happened was she again tried to manipulate the sessions, and again I tried to stick to my boundary. And what happened as a result of that was I started to get a barrage of emails from mum. So it was like two or three a day, every day for about 18 months, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails. It got to the point where I stopped reading the emails. I said to mum that it wasn't okay for her to continue to do that and to continue to contact me in that way. She was sending me emails that you just continue to scroll through. Like, it was just like a big brain dump. So I was, just saying to mum, you know, please go and see your psychologist, you know, doing all of the right things, that, you know, following all the codes of conduct and the codes of ethics, ticking all my boxes, dotting my I's, crossing my T's. And it continued. And then so I told the mum that I wasn't going to be opening any more of her emails. And then what happened was mum started, she withdrew the little girl from therapy again. Mum started then doing things like leaving notes under the windscreen of my car, like threatening and harassing notes under the windscreen of my car. Then she started slipping notes under the door at the practice where I was working that were, you know, not nice notes to read. And what was happening was there were clients in reception and I had virtual admin at the time. So there wasn't a receptionist, like a you know, a body there, but there would be a client or two in reception. And I could hear this note being slid under the door and I would have to excuse myself from the therapy session I was in to go and retrieve said note before one of the other clients who was sitting in reception saw it. So it was a real mess. Then she started leaving aggressive messages with my admin team. You know, then she started harassing them. Then we started to get letters in the post from this lady and it just didn't stop. And I felt at the time helpless because the advice really was that, to me, was that there wasn't much that I could do, that I had dotted my I's and crossed my T's, that, you know, I needed to close off the file. So, of course, the file was closed off, but these communications from the mother continued. Anyway, they ended up, the mother and the child ended up disappearing for about a year. And then just quite unexpectedly, the dad bought the child. And anyway, I didn't know that it was the dad. I didn't know that it was the child. They booked in under a different name, all that sort of jazz. I recognized the child as soon as I came out into reception. And so I knew that I was going to have to, like, you know, handle this situation. So that's what I did. And a couple of days later, the mum booked herself in under another name. And so she was booked in. And then I came out into reception and I see the mum standing there and she's not happy. And anyway, she starts yelling and shouting in the middle of reception in front of other clients. And this was really, you know, problematic. So I usher her into my room and I'm trying to calm her down and de-escalate things and be very professional. But I remember, between you and I, feeling so hot, feeling so triggered, feeling so intimidated and threatened. You know, I don't know what this mother's own mental health state was, but clearly, you know, there was something, you know, that she was perhaps trying to deal with herself on a personal level. And yeah, for some reason she'd become fixated with me. I don't know why, but she'd become fixated with me. And so she was back. Again, I had to try and handle that situation, put the boundaries in place, usher her out. And then we ended up getting like more security at the practice, or doing all of that sort of stuff, you know, just unpleasant stuff. Then the notes started coming under my windscreen wipers again, notes under the door again, you know, stuff like that. And then there were things that I couldn't say she did, but they weren't happening before she was back. So I'm assuming, and that's probably not a good thing to do, but I'm assuming that, you know, she was responsible for some of these other things that happened, like some graffiti that was put on our practice that, you know, was the same as comments and phrases she'd said in her interactions with myself. So anyway, it was really uncomfortable. And I remember thinking, you know, am I at risk here? Am I doing everything that I'm meant to be doing professionally? Am I doing everything that I'm meant to be doing ethically? I remember talking to my supervisor about it, and I just felt helpless. And I'm sure she did too, because there just wasn't anything more that we could do. I rang my insurer and I said, what do I do here? And the advice from the insurer was, I'd done everything right, and I was, you know, okay, like in terms of meeting my obligations and my duty of care and all of that sort of stuff. So I knew that that was all okay, but I myself wasn't. These interactions with this person would throw me for the rest of the day, which would mean I wasn't in a good state of mind to be able to serve the remaining clients for that day. So I was finding that I was you know, to look after those clients, I was having to reschedule them. And then that's not a nice feeling because I don't want to be rescheduling them. They've done nothing wrong. You know, and I didn't want to explain to them what had happened. And I think when you're in this state where you're getting, it feels like harassment, it feels like stalking, all of those sorts of things, you as a woman in private practice feel very, very, very conflicted because, sorry, if you can hear pitter-pattering, this is Gabe running up and down the corridor. I think he's wanting some attention. But you, it's very easy for you to feel intimidated, especially when you're in solo private practice. I mean, of course, you can feel like this as well when you're in a group, but it's probably more difficult for you if you're the practice owner. And so what ended up happening for me was this woman ended up threatening to make complaints. She threatened to, you know, say horrible things about me on social media and do all of that kind of stuff. So I speak to the insurer. The insurer's like, maybe you want to talk to the police and, you know, get some kind of order put in place so that she can't come onto the premises anymore and she can't do this and she can't do that. When I hear this advice, I'm, you know, again, triggered because I don't want things to escalate. I go and talk to my supervisor. My supervisor's sort of saying, well, you know, it's your decision, but if you think it's going to escalate things, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we had to have this whole discussion as well. In the end, I didn't, but what I did do was I just started like keeping, what do I want to say? I just started making more detailed notes about how I was feeling, about what was going through my mind, my heart, what was happening for me, how this was affecting me, because I needed to find a way of processing everything. And I was trying to process it through all the external things, you know, like trying to deal with this woman, trying to get advice from my insurer, trying to get advice from, you know, my codes of ethics and my codes of conduct and all of that, trying to get advice from my supervisor. I didn't want to reach out to any peers because I was embarrassed. And I was ashamed because I was thinking, well, if I was a good therapist, then maybe I wouldn't be in this situation. I don't want people to think I'm not a good therapist. So I didn't talk about it in, you know, support groups or anything like that. I kept it very much to myself. You know, there's a lot of fear of judgment. There's a fear of looking incompetent. There's a fear of, you know, in the helping professions, I don't know if you found this, but it's been my experience that sometimes we're the harshest to each other, you know. Psychologists can be really harsh to each other. Social workers can, so can counsellors. And so they're a very difficult group to go to for support when you're one of them. It's like if you're a client, no problem, you get all the support in the world. But if you're a peer or colleague, it can be really tricky. But I was very, very, very fortunate to have some good peer support at the time. And really, without that peer support, I don't think I would have gotten through it. The other thing that I did was I got support for myself through a few different avenues. So I went and got some counseling to help me deal with it because I realized that what was happening was that this is how I now see it, okay? And if you've been through it, maybe you might be in a similar place to me now, but you don't see this at the time. But how I see it now is that this woman was a lesson, and she was a lesson in my growth, and she was triggering something within me that needed to rise up in order to be healed. And for me, what that was, you know, this core belief of not being good enough. And so without going through this situation, I wouldn't have been able to heal that wounded part of my feminine around not being good enough, likable enough, lovable enough, all those sorts of things. That was, in a nutshell, that was what was at the bottom of it for me. And that took a long time to get to, but that's where it was. And then once I understood that, I was then able to work on healing that, which then really helped close things over and, you know, I haven't had any issues with any of that sort of stuff since. The other thing that I did was, of course, I went and connected with my doctor and got a checkup because I wanted to make sure I was okay. I wanted to make sure my blood pressure was all right, my stress was okay and stuff like that. So I made regular appointments for monitoring and checkups with my doctor. Plus, my doctor's a super good listener, and so that was great. So I was very thankful to have his support at the time. And then the other thing that I did was I connected back into my spiritual practices. So for me, that meant getting back into journaling so that I could process what was going on. I also connected with a kinesiologist and an energy healer, and I can't begin to tell you how much that helped me. It just helped me so much. I mean, I was at the point where I couldn't even open email. Like, I was having panic attacks opening my email because I knew this woman was going to be threatening me or intimidating me or bullying me or harassing me or something like that. So, which of course has an effect on your practice, doesn't it? But again, I'm sharing this with you because in Australia, the numbers aren't clearly defined for things like harassment and stalking and things like that in private practice. There's a very loose number at the moment, which is about 15% of women in private practice in their careers will experience some kind of intimidation, harassment, or stalking behavior from a client. And that number, that percent there of that 15 is, I would imagine, grossly underreported because of what I was saying with you. You know how I was feeling. I was feeling embarrassed, ashamed, guilty, incompetent. I felt like I had imposter syndrome all over again. All those unwanted feelings. And do you know what? You just feel so alone. You just feel so isolated, so alone. And that's probably the hardest thing because it makes it hard to get that support. So anyway, I'm sharing this with you because I want you to understand that if this or when this happens to you, number one, you're not alone. It's going to feel like you are, and you might be like me and you might not want to reach out for support. And I get that and I understand that, but you need to find someone, even if it's a peer or your supervisor, but you need to find someone that you can speak openly and freely with without judgment. And get them to listen and, you know, get a fresh set of eyes on what's going on for you. And you know what? Sometimes it's really helpful to have somebody, help you work through some stuff. And the other thing that I would suggest is, you know, number one, you be aware of the types of flags for these kinds of behaviors. So looking back, the type of flag for me was, you know, that mother crossing a boundary right early on in our time together, and me perhaps not being quick enough to put something in place, me just kind of letting it go because we were in the phase of establishing rapport. So I know now have clearer boundaries in place. I think you also need to be aware of other flags. Like, I'm sharing just my worst example with you. But it's different for everyone. There was another time when I was dealing with a client who was a narcissistic male, and it was early in my career. And what he did was he was, you know, openly flirting with me. Little things like I shake his hand to welcome him into a session, and he'd hold my hand and my gaze for a bit longer than was appropriate, and things like that. And then he sent flowers to the practice and just inappropriate things. And so I had to put lots of boundaries in place with him. But make sure that you're aware of what the flags can be, because if you don't catch them early on, things escalate quite quickly, and then you lose control. It becomes them being in control. They're dictating how you're going to feel. You're not in control of your response anymore, because you find yourself triggered, you find yourself intimidated, you find yourself highly emotional, and you find yourself in a place of reacting to things instead of responding, which takes you out of control. So be aware of what some of the flags can be so that you can mitigate them as best as you can right from the outset and nip anything in the bud. It's much better. Prevention is always better than cure. Number two, look after your practice, look after yourself. That means in practical terms, Be prepared in terms of your documentation. So put your boundaries on your consent form. They have to be there upfront, black and white. This person who you're going to work with has to agree to these terms of service in order to be able to work with you. And so put whatever boundaries you're going to be invoking for your practice right there on that form. So some simple boundaries might be no contact by social media. It might be no contact by email. It might be no contact after hours. It might be, do you know what it might be, no exchanging of gifts. Whatever is going to work for you, and only you know that for your practice based on the demographic of client you work with and how you work with them and all of that sort of jazz. But put something there in black and white, have it documented, make them sign off on it before they work with you. And go over it with them in the first appointment and document in your notes that it was also discussed in the first appointment. That way you're covered. If anything happens and you can terminate the service, you can refer them on. Do you know what I mean? You can follow whatever protocols your profession, your code of conduct, your code of ethics recommends and get that person moved on to somebody who might be a better fit for you. And if you're a woman who's feeling intimidated by a male, maybe that is even something like either referring that person back to, if it was their doctor, referring that person back to their doctor with a recommendation that they're connected with somebody that specializes in A, B, and C. And sometimes even if you feel that they might be better suited or that might be a better match to work with a male, for example, if it's a male that's been crossing the boundaries and bothering you, might be that in your professional judgment, perhaps they might be a better match for a male therapist who also has an area of interest in A, B, and C. So there are lots of different pathways that you can take. Always, you know, number three, always where you can get support. So I would absolutely recommend discussing things with your supervisor, getting peer supervision and any other support. You know, I went and saw my doctor. I went and saw a kinesiologist and an energy healer. I journaled my heart out. I deepened my spiritual practice. I got into gratitude. One of the other things that really helped me was doing a metta meditation. That's M-E-T-A. So a metta meditation is a practice that you do for yourself that allows you to forgive. And I know that you might not be ready to forgive if you're in the throes of it now, but I would encourage you to listen to a metta meditation. There are a couple on YouTube that are really, really good, but what's good for me might not be good for you, you know. So have a listen to a couple and see which one resonates with you. The process is the same for a metta meditation, but some of the ones on YouTube, for example, have different background music and stuff like that. So find something that's going to feel good for you. Sit down and listen to that and just allow yourself to go through the process. When I did it, it made me very emotional, but that emotionality allowed me to have a release. And from that release, I was then able to move into a place of forgiveness. I did that metta meditation every day for a week, and it really helped a lot. The other thing that really helped me a lot was a Ho'oponopono meditation, you know, that Ho'oponopono prayer. So that's, you know, talking about love and forgiveness. And it's you saying that you're sorry, please forgive me, I love you. And there's one other line for that that I can't remember just off the top of my head, but that really works as well. And there are apps that you can download for your phone that are a Ho'oponopono meditation. It's a Hawaiian forgiveness prayer. The other thing, what was I going to say that really helped me? Oh my goodness, I've just forgotten. Gratitude. Now, this is going to sound hard to swallow as well if you're in the middle of dealing with, an unwanted situation at the moment. But when I say gratitude, what I'm talking about is finding the thing to be thankful for in this situation. And I'll go back to my example here. So after this was over, or towards the end of it being over, I was able to write out a gratitude I guess, little essay, if you like, just thanking this person for coming into my practice and coming into my life, for being the mirror to show me and really magnifying what needed to be healed within me in terms of my sense of self-worth. And I really thanked her for teaching me about the importance of boundaries. I really thanked her for helping me improve my practice for new clients who are coming into it as we move forward, because I've now been able to put tighter and more comprehensive policies and procedures in place to protect not only myself but other clients. I also thanked her for raising my awareness around the importance of self-care, and for showing me that for too long I've been leaking a lot of my energy to clients. And when I say leaking my energy, I mean I've been going and giving my all day, every day, but not doing too much to refill my own cup and look after myself. And so it was through the trauma of dealing with this situation that spanned nearly 3 years. It was through dealing with that trauma that I really learned the importance of connecting in with my heart and soul and spirit. You know, one of the things that really helped me a lot too was a simple practice that I do, and I even to this day share it with my coaching clients, and that is so simple. It's just really to put your hand on your heart and settle your breath right down and close your eyes and just allow yourself to ask, check in with yourself, what do I need right now? You know, what do I need to heal right now? That's something you can ask yourself, and the guidance will come through almost instantly. And when you get that guidance, say thank you and then go about your day. Something else that you could ask is, what do I need to know right now? And you will get an answer almost instantly. And when you get that answer, allow yourself to receive it, have gratitude for it, and then take your hand off your chest and move on with the day. But you have, I believe you have the guidance, the nourishment, the knowledge, the love, the compassion, and the forgiveness within you. Just drop out of your head and drop into your heart from time to time to connect in with that, and allow that guidance to be your intention for that day. Yeah. So there are a few things there that you can do to try and cope with these really, really difficult situations when they arise, and they will arise for most of you. There's a higher prevalence of this happening to women than to men in private practice in Australia. The percentage is roughly 7%, but again, there's no definite answers because of, you know, the tendency for us as health professionals to underreport for all sorts of reasons. So anyway, you're absolutely not alone. There is help there. If you're wanting some guidance, or if you're wanting to connect with other people, you might want to think about joining a new group that I started just this week, actually. It's called the Australian Counsellors in Private Practice. It's a free group that you can join. It's got lots of support in there. It's got live Zoom sessions each week with me for a Q&A where you can come and get some guidance on your practice. And it's only for counsellors who are in private practice. That's how it differs from other groups that you might be in. It's not necessarily for psychologists and social workers. It's really for counsellors who are needing some guidance and support. But if there are social workers and psychologists that want to join, then they're absolutely more than welcome to come in as well. I will put the link for that in the show notes so that you can come in and connect with other women in private practice, and men too. And I will look forward to supporting you then. But guys, the message is, you're absolutely not alone. I'm here. If there's nobody else that you can connect with, I'm here, okay? I'm absolutely here, and you can connect with me anytime. All right, thank you so much for listening. Please do download this episode, save it, share it with somebody who needs to hear it right now. Bookmark it for a time when maybe you might be going through something similar in your practice, so that you can remember what to do and how to manage things and where to go for support. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Private Practice with Soul podcast today. If you're looking for clarity, if you need help with branding, your processes, and bringing everything into alignment with your soul's purpose for your private practice, head to the show notes and click the link for more information about the Private Practice Monthly Mentorship Group. You are going to love it. I can't wait to see you in there. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.